the man with the game information. Game and Steve, Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Game and Steve, giving the news to the next generation. Game and Steve, give me news,
give me views,
Game and Steve,
he got the game.
What's to see?
What's to see?
What's to be?
Game and Steve, he got the game.
Tell me how, tell me now.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who puts the mega in Mega Man, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Steve Glicker, and in this week's show, I'm going to go through my background and try to remind you who the heck this Steve fellow is anyhow. I'm going to give you my E3 2015 overview on what I thought of everything. I'm going to be going through why I'm bringing back Gaming Steve and what the future holds. I'm going to go through some questions that were sent, believe it or not, even though I just came back after 5 years. And I'm even going to have a little contest to spice things up. So with that out of the way, welcome back, true believers, to Gaming Steve. It's been, 5 years since my last show? Someone said it's like the Olympics. Every 4 to 5 years, I do a new show. Well, I am dedicated to doing the shows very often. I don't know if it's going to be weekly. I don't know if it's going to be bi-weekly. I'm still figuring this out exactly. But we are going to be doing them more regularly. There are going to be a constant show coming out from now on. If you noticed, I updated the website. I've updated the site in general. It's on a monster server right now, so it can handle a lot of traffic, a lot of forum traffic. It always was on a pretty good server, but I went a little nuts this time. And you guys can look forward to new shows, new content, and some pretty cool new stuff, because a lot has changed since I did the show. So with that being said, for those of you who are old-time Gaming Steve sufferers, welcome back, and I apologize for everything. I'll try to make this up to you. For those of you who are brand new, let me give you a little bit of background of me and the site in general. So once again, my name is Steven Glicker. I have been in the gaming industry for, I know it sounds insane, but over 30 years. I actually had to write that down because I didn't even believe it, but I actually looked and it's been almost 30 years exactly, which is a little nuts. That being said, Gaming Steve started over 10 years ago. It actually started in March 2005 from the GDC, the Game Developers Conference back then. And actually the first one I ever did, I reported on Spore. Remember Spore, guys? Remember when that was the focus of the show? Well, anyhow, Spore has come and gone, and Gaming Steve sort of came and went as well, but now I'm back. Just to give you an idea of my background, I did the show for about 3 years, and then I stopped it, and then I brought it back, and then I stopped it again. And one of the reasons I kind of stopped it is that at the time, I really didn't see where this was going. It was taking up a huge amount of time. Gaming Steve was taking up about 10 to 20 hours a week on minimum, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have a full-time job and you have two kids and you're like, you know, traveling to talk to people and, you know, keep the show going, it was a lot of time. And there really was no, I didn't see an end game. YouTube wasn't even out back then. There was definitely no such thing as Twitch. You know, it was just, there was really not a lot of outlets. Again, I think it was kind of a little bit ahead of its time, not to be cocky or anything, but, you know, podcasting sort of was really interesting and it was a thing, but not a lot of people were following it. And then podcasting kind of went away a little bit and it kind of died a little, not a lot. It sort of like got into a weird state, but then something strange happened. I went away. And then all of a sudden, YouTube blew up and Twitch blew up. And then not only did YouTube blow up, but all the most popular games on YouTube, I mean, all the popular streamers were streaming video games. And if you look, all the top streamers are all video games, obviously a lot of Minecraft, a lot of League of Legends, but there's a lot of video games and gaming personalities on the web now. And I just keep kicking myself because At the height of Gaming Steve back then was pretty huge. And if I kept with it, I can only imagine how big this thing would have been, which is actually one of the reasons why I didn't even want to bring it back, because I felt like I kind of missed my chance. But after thinking about it for a long time, I looked at the overview of how many hits, not even hits, how many page views the website's had over the years. And this is pretty astounding. The Gaming Steve website has had over 150 million page views. That's a lot of page views. And that's not hits, that's paged views. And that was actually a low estimate because I actually don't have full tracking for when it was actually in the height. I would probably put it even higher than that. And something else more insane is that Gaming Steve still is sometimes in the top 100 of gaming podcasts. It still gets several thousands of downloads to this day. Even though I haven't done a show in years, it still gets thousands of downloads. And I'm thinking, man, if the site is still that popular, it still gets a lot of hits. There's a lot of page views on the site. Most people are going to the forums, obviously, because there's nothing else on the site to do. But I'm thinking, well, it's like I don't do anything, and look at how popular it is. And now, considering how popular gaming is in general, with so many outlets, and I figured, you know what, this is the time to kind of bring it back. I kind of owe it to some people. And also, things in my life have gotten a little bit more stable. My kids are much older now. I have a little bit more free time. Gaming has also gotten to a place where I think it's a little bit more approachable. I'll go through that probably in a future show. And also, I had some ideas that I wanted to get off my chest. I had some cool ideas of how to enhance the show and make it really cool. That's not going to happen yet, but you guys will know when it happens. Trust me on that. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I brought back the show. So I guess I did that early. I said I was going to do that later, but okay, I lied. I'm doing that now. So for my background, for Gaming Steve, people are saying, who the heck are you? Again, this might sound a little boisterous. It's hard to do that without giving a biography of yourself, but here we go. I started out playing video games with the Telstar Arcade. I'm sure 99% of you have no idea what I'm talking about. Look it up. Telstar Arcade was this big console from the 70s that looked like it was made out of wood, and it had three games on it. It had Pong, it had a driving game, and it had a gun game. And that was it. And it was all a little white square on a big TV that didn't have a remote control, that only had 13 channels that you would have to click to chunk it across the different stations. So that was my initial foray into video games. From there, I actually got the first, that was actually my friend's system. My first system was the VCS. That was the system before the Atari 2600. The VCS came out first. Then it was like the Sears station. It was something from Sears. Then it went to the 2600, and I got one of those. And not one of the cheapo four button ones, the ones you see now that have like the four switches. No, no, no. I had the six switch one. I had the real 2600. And that's really what I grew up on. I grew up with the 2600, with Atari Age, with Intellivision, with the Magnavox Odyssey 2. With Microvision. Microvision was the predecessor to Game Boy. If you want to look that one up, that one was awesome. It actually had a cartridge-based system. And this is the early 80s, so that's really what I grew up with. After that, went right into ColecoVision, Vectrex, which is still, to this date, one of the greatest consoles of all time. 5200, NES, Sega Master System, Game Boy, Sega Genesis, TurboGrafx-16, etc., etc., and really grew up at the age of when Mario came out. I remember going to the store, buying Mega Man the day came out. We had no idea how to play that game. One of my favorite memories is that we were playing the game. We couldn't get to the end. We couldn't figure out how to get past. We could only get about halfway through the game. And then, and the instructions on Mega Man, the original, were atrocious. You couldn't even figure it. There was like no instructions. And then somehow we figured out you hit like one of the buttons, and then we figured out, wait a second, you can change Mega Man to other forms. And then it was like an epiphany. It was like one of my greatest memories. And then all of a sudden we blew through the game and beat it that day. But we were so crazy. We almost beat, not quite, because it was impossible to beat Mega Man without transforming, but we came pretty as close as you can get, let's just say. From there, continued my genesis of video games. I bought Zelda, Legend of Zelda, literally the day it came out. I went to the store. I saw this cartridge. It was gold. I was like, that's pretty cool. It had saving capability, which I thought was awesome at the time. I'm like, oh, cool. Bought it, devoured it, finished it in a week. And back then, there was no internet. There was nothing. There was no one had the game. You couldn't talk to anyone. You just had to figure stuff out. And nowadays, everyone knows about secrets and stuff. But back then, no one knew anything. It was completely unique. It was a totally unique experience. I remember even going into school, telling everyone I beat the game, and people were just like coming to me asking for advice. It was one of, again, another highlight of my life. On top of that, so pretty much every console to date since then, I've owned every console. I play everything. Some people might say, oh, he likes Sony, he likes Nintendo, he likes Microsoft. No, I like gaming. I really don't care. At certain points and certain times, some companies will be doing things better than others. But really, I just play games. If the game came out, if it's a good iPad game, I'll play that. If it's a good, you know, heck, if a game came out and it was really good for the Apple Watch, I'd play that. I really don't care, as long as it's a good game. On top of that, on the other side, I also learned how to program the Apple II Plus. I started my foray into PC gaming very, very early. I had an Apple II Plus back in, I think it was 1982. And I actually taught myself programming. I released my very first game called Mole Maniacs in 1986. I then went to college specifically for programming. Since then, when I graduated, I started my own company. And we did a lot of internet-related websites and internet-related properties. One of the things we did is we actually also did a lot of casual games. And you probably heard of this one. We did a lot of casual games for a property called Harry Potter. Scholastic actually was my client at the time. I was doing a lot of websites for them. And they said to me, hey, there's this new book coming out called Harry Potter. You might want to look into it. After that, I went to Disney. We did some Disney games, Timon and Pumbaa games for Yahoo and Disney. We did Blue's Clues games, Little Bill's games, mostly games for kids, I won't lie, but that's sort of my background in gaming. We also did a few others, but I did games for Sports Illustrated, did a lot of like fun online casual type games. But don't mistake, gaming, the structure for doing a game, whether it's a small game or a large game, is the same. It's just the amount of assets you have in the game and the scope of the game. But gaming is gaming. Whether it's a small or big one, you still have the same issues. After that, I eventually sold that company. And now I actually still do kind of the same stuff. Not so much gaming anymore. Now I do a little bit more gamification for various companies. In addition, at the same time, out of coincidence or for whatever reason, I had a lot of friends who were going into the game industry in the early 90s, and a lot of them are bigwigs now. One of my good friends, one of my best friends, John Statz, he was the very first 3D designer ever hired by Blizzard. He was hired for a new game at the time called World of Warcraft. So through him and through hanging out with him, I was able to meet a lot of people and also just going to all the conventions, just in general, like hanging out. Through him, I actually managed to play WoW. At one point, I remember I was hanging out at Blizzard playing WoW. The maximum level was 7. There was nothing built in the game, and it was so unbalanced that you couldn't fight anything. It was like there was nothing. I remember you'd go to where the major cities were. The land was laid out, but like where the major cities would be, there was actually like little construction cones, and they had sort of vendors lined up along a road just so you could at least talk to some general vendors. That's my first memory of playing World of Warcraft, and I remember it was insanely hard, and all I did was run around the map. That's kind of all I did because the spiders and other low-level things were so unbalanced they would just kill you outright. So from there, I actually then went to, I've been going to GDC for over 20 years, the Game Developers Conference. I've been going to E3 for 19 years. And right now, I'm part owner in a company that is minority owned by one of the largest game companies in the world. I can't talk about it exactly, but I will say in probably a few months, a year or so, I'll be able to talk about it. And let's just say it's going to be pretty big. And this is actually one of my investments right now. So I'm still pretty involved in the game industry. And in general, not only am I really big into video games, so this is my background in video games, I also have a background in general gaming. I am Magic the Gathering. I was playing since Alpha. I have a 4-digit DCI number, if that means anything to you. Board gaming. I've been playing German and every type of board game you can imagine since birth. I have, a huge selection of board games, fantasy games. I've been playing a fantasy baseball league for almost 30 years with the same guys. I do fantasy football. I've done just probably every type of fantasy sport you can imagine. Anything else you could think of, any other type of game. Oh, Dungeons and Dragons. I've been doing Dungeons and Dragons, now Pathfinder. I've been doing a weekly game for almost 30 plus years. I've been doing right now, I actually DM a game for my friends online. I've been doing that for like 5 years or something. And to this day, I still play, you know, Magic the Gathering and a few others. So every aspect of gaming, poker, do tournament poker. So anything in the gaming world, I am somehow connected. I have played, I know people. So I try to always stay on top of it. And most of my day seems to be reading and learning about gaming rather than playing it. But I still manage to sneak in a few games. I usually get around 3 or 4 hours per night of gaming and solid gaming. So with that, that was my very long intro. I apologize for anyone if that bored the crap out of you. So with that, let's go into the E3 overview, shall we? So first up, we will talk about Bethesda. I will actually go through each of these. And then, you know what, at the end, I'll talk about Nintendo and I'll talk about the World Championships. I meant to talk about that first, but we'll go kind of in the order that they presented. Bethesda was their very first E3 conference. I thought it was a pretty good one, considering they've never done one before. It was a mixed bag. I mean, Bethesda really, they're in a weird place. They sort of where Blizzard was maybe 15 years ago. Blizzard, if you remember, used to go to E3. They used to make a big showing, and Blizzard really didn't go anywhere else. They sort of just went to E3, and that was it. And they would make a pretty big deal about going to E3. They didn't have conferences, but they definitely would go all out on their booths. But now Blizzard's so big, they got BlizzCon, they don't go to anything. You know, occasionally they'll go to GDC, that's pretty rare even. You know, they're just too big. They're too big for this. Everyone knows it, they know it, so they don't really do anything. Bethesda is kind of that place where they're very big, they got a lot of huge franchises, they're kind of turning into a Blizzard, they're not quite there yet, they're not big enough to have their own convention, but I wouldn't be surprised in a few years if Bethesda does their own convention, because they almost have enough properties they could. First up, they showed, I'm not going in exact order, but they showed Doom. Doom, as usual, looked really amazing. It looked kind of slow and chunky to me. I don't know how well it plays. I didn't get a chance to play it yet. It did look kind of slow. I mean, yes, the graphics are amazing. That's the big thing about Doom. It's known for amazing graphics. And I actually remember something funny. I remember when the last Doom came out. And remember, the last Doom came out, it was probably about 10 years ago, 10, 9 years ago. And people were saying how insane the graphics were and how it was killing everyone's like hardware and you had to have the absolute best to play it. And then it was like, I think PC Gamer had this, they always did this funny April Fool's version of PC Gamer, and they would have like funny stories in it. And on the cover, they had a PC Gamer from 10 years later. They had like PC Gamer from like 2014. And on the cover, they said, play Doom on your cell phone. And I remember reading that. I was like, what? That is crazy. Because at the time, you couldn't play Doom on the like most powerful PC. And I was thinking, man, that is nuts. And I always think about that because you could easily play Doom on your iPhone or Android, no problem. It is just insane that not only were they accurate, they were actually a little behind. Like 10 years later, they probably could have played Doom a few years ago. So I always think about that whenever I see these conferences now. I'm like, wow, yeah, those graphics are amazing. I will be probably playing Doom on my computer inside my refrigerator in 10 years at this point. As good as they are now, remember, graphics will fade. And it's really gameplay that matters. So I'm excited. It looks pretty cool. I don't know. It was very situational. Yeah, it really had a lot of scripting to the combat, a lot of scripting to the encounters. I don't know how that will play out. I guess we'll have to see. Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, yes. This thing called Fallout 4 that people were talking about. Yes, they showed that as well. That was the most amount of time at the press conference. You know, one thing I was commenting on Twitter you know, they were showing, oh, look, this is how you make your character. And you would, like, stretch out the person's face. And people are cheering like crazy, like, woohoo, big deal. Okay, cool. It was neat that you could, you know, they're making the interface intuitive with the actual gameplay. That was pretty cool. Is it worth cheering about? I'm not exactly sure, but there you go. The game looks amazing. The beautiful game. I am finding that these open world experiences, these open world gaming, are sort of becoming the new thing. I can go through reasons why, probably not right this second, but, you know, right now, for example, I'm playing Witcher 3. This game is absolutely a monster of a game. I can't get over how big it is. It's obnoxiously large, as I've said before. It's so big. It's kind of disgusting that it's so big, but yet at the same time, it's just engrossing. And hopefully, and I'm doing everything. I'm not one of those people who just play the main story. Like, I'm going to do the full 200+ hours on Witcher 3 easily. I'm going to be playing all the Gwent. I'm doing everything. So I just hope I finish it before Fallout 4 comes out, because it's probably my next two games for the next year, or just these two games. The one thing that Bethesda does not do so great, and this kind of concerns me, is they don't do game balance that great. You often will get completely OP just a little bit into the game, and then it's up to you to sort of rebalance the game to your liking. You know, I am really impressed with Witcher 3. They do a very good job with game balance. The progression system is extremely slow, and yeah, it sometimes gets a little easy, but I've died many, many, many times in the game when I probably shouldn't have. And I think the combat's a little deeper than most people think. This isn't becoming a Witcher 3 review, but I'm just comparing, because those are probably the two most likely comparisons. That and Grand Theft Auto 5. But Grand Theft Auto 5 is more of a mission-based progressive game. Witcher 3 is more of an open-world game. It looks like Fallout 4 is going to be closer to Witcher 3 than, say, Grand Theft Auto. So I'm going to use those two as comparisons. And guaranteed, when this comes out, everyone's going to compare it to two things. They're going to compare it to Fallout 3, which really is a bad comparison because it's, you know, many years later. And they're going to compare it to Witcher 3, because those are going to be the Witcher 3 is sort of going to be the benchmark from now on. What am I going to say? It looks awesome. The Fallout world is a lot of fun. It's big. It's open world. It has crafting, which is nice. It has modding, which is nice. It had a lot of aspects of the game that, you know, could really make it interesting. From that, Dishonored 2 was shown. Dishonored was one of those games that got a million accolades. I don't know anyone who played it except one person. I actually played it because that one person told me to play it, and I was kind of stunned. I really don't know anyone. You know, it did really well. It did sell really well. But it's one of those games that did really well, but yet I don't know anyone who talked about it. I don't know anyone who played it. And I don't just mean my friends. I mean, I talked to friends in game companies, and these guys play everything. And even they were like, oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about that. Like, even they never played it. So maybe I'm just in the wrong circles. But Dishonored was very good. It was a solid game. Dishonored 2. It's probably going to do the same thing that the Uncharted series did to Fallout, to the Dishonored series. If you remember, Dishonored came out and it did okay. It was one of those, it's sort of people who knew about it really liked it. But then when Uncharted 2 came out, it blew up. Like, then everyone was talking, and that became like a AAA franchise. I think Dishonored 2 is going to do kind of the same thing, as long as it's good. There was something else they showed called Battle Cry, which is going off. It has a beta coming up, or you can sign up for it. Kind of look like a shooter MOBA, which, I've had enough of those. Actually, here, the one I was very interested in talking about was Elder Scrolls Legends. So this, again, this one I'm using Blizzard, a direct competitor to Hearthstone and Wizards of the Coast with Magic the Gathering. It was only a matter of time. Hearthstone is making a absolute ton of money for Blizzard. They love it. I can go through a whole history. I know the guys who wrote the game. They kind of did it on the side. They kind of did it. They were using existing assets. They kind of just threw something together. They decided to turn it into a game. It became a monster hit. Like, the beta, people were spending $500 on the beta. And when they saw that, like, a lot of people were spending that, because that's about what you needed at the time to get all the cards. And a lot of people were doing it. And they realized, man, when people are spending $500 to get beta cards, that they're onto something. And the game was barely, you know, working back then. So you better believe that you're going to start seeing everyone come out with competitors to Hearthstone. So they're coming out with Elder Scrolls Legends. Nothing is known about it, but actually, I know a little bit more about it than other people. It's being designed by Direwolf Digital. Direwolf Digital has a lot of people from the Magic the Gathering community, including LSV, Louis Scott Vargas, who's one of the top Magic players in the world. And it also has several members of the Channel Fireball team, who also, these are some of the top players in the world. Now, I've seen this happen before. Just because you really, really know how to play Magic doesn't necessarily mean that you are a good game designer. I will be very fascinated to see Elder Scrolls Legends, how it does. They do understand the concepts, and they understand the core concept of game design. They understand things like LSV and this team will understand things like card advantage. They'll understand things like control decks. They'll understand things like rush decks, like red decks. You know, they'll know the basic concepts and sort of what aspects you need to make a game good. That being said, really, to date, it's, if you notice, just Magic the Gathering, for whatever reason, just sort of hit on that perfect mix of card games. If you haven't played it before, I strongly recommend you download the iPad or the PC game and play it. It's really a lot of fun. Even if you're old and you haven't played it, you think, oh, it's a kid game. Trust me, any age, it's still a fantastic game. And if anything, it's better now than it's ever been. It's extremely well balanced. They update the cards continuously. It's a really good time to get into it. But except for Magic and now Hearthstone, there's not a lot of games that really have gotten legs and take off. Obviously, you have Pokemon and a few others, but it's really hard to design a good card game. It just is. And a good collectible card game that stays balanced, that is vibrant over many, many years. Hex tried to do it recently. Hex is getting sued because it is a near identical clone from what it looks like as Magic, to the point that they barely change the names of the cards. So it's kind of scary when you look at it, because it's just hard. It's hard to come up with a game that isn't Magic. It just is. Another thing is Magic's really complex. If you try to do another game, you could do these games that are called column games, where you're basically stuck putting games in columns and areas. Gwent in Witcher 3 is kind of like this. And it's okay for short bursts, but over very long, and I mean like years, it's sort of limiting. And that's the beautiful thing about Magic, is that there's no limitations. Hearthstone has some limitations, but it doesn't feel like it hampers on gameplay, that you can only have, what is it, seven or eight creatures out at once, just going by memory. So it doesn't feel like gameplay is hampered. So again, Elder Scrolls Legend has a very good pedigree. I could probably get one of these guys on the show. I actually know some of them. I'll see what I can do. No one knows anything about it, but I'm going to be very fascinated. And that comes out this year, supposedly. What else? Fallout Shelter was a fun little game that came out for the iOS right away. It sort of is like a little computer people person type game where you're managing people in a shelter. It's coming out for Android later. I was pretty excited. I downloaded it right away. It's okay. I mean, it's not quite as good as I thought. It looks like you're always running out of bottle caps. And although they said they're not doing it for money and that they're not trying to make money off of it, it seems pretty slow going unless you want to start buying things. So it's okay. It's not quite what I would say the best first effort, but it looks awesome. I will say the graphics are gorgeous. So, oh, and finally, there was something else I forgot to mention, is that Fallout 4 comes out with this Pip-Boy. You can get like the deluxe version. It's a real Pip-Boy that you can actually put your, it looks like your iPhone, into it, and then it sort of acts like a Pip-Boy. And then there's a app you can get that will follow along, and it sort of works with Fallout 4. I have an iPhone 6 Plus, probably won't fit that, but I'll probably still get it anyhow. And I don't know, get my wife's iPhone 6 and throw it in there. So from Bethesda, we'll go to, so overall, Bethesda, solid, good first showing, sort of establishing that they're a big player, they're a big boy, you know, they're up in the league with Blizzard and Activision, that they're like here to stay, and that they got some big, some big games to show off. Next up was Microsoft. So my overall feeling was that it feels like, and this has happened for the last couple of years, you have Nintendo that's just doing kind of whatever they want. They have Sony, which sometimes is emulating or trying to catch up to Nintendo. Not always, but sometimes. And I'll explain why. And then you have Microsoft. It feels like they're always answering to Sony. So, again, it feels like it's that way. A couple of years ago, you would completely flip that. It felt like the other way around. It felt like Nintendo was still leading. Microsoft was sort of catching up to Nintendo, and then Sony was catching up to Microsoft. Now it's all flipped. Microsoft made a lot of progress in this convention. One thing I did notice, they did, and probably a lot of people did, no Kinect. Remember when the Kinect was impossible to separate from the Xbox? And they were going on and on about how it's designed specifically for the Xbox. You need Kinect, blah, blah, blah. 2 years ago, it was inseparable. Last year, it was sort of mentioned. This year, not a peep. No games are being developed for Kinect. Nothing is being developed for Kinect. It's, for all intents and purposes, dead. And you know what? It deserves to die. And it's not because it was a bad idea. It's a fantastic idea. But I was reading, it's accurate about 70% of the time. You can't release a product in this day and age that's 70% accurate. Even if it was 98% accurate, I don't even know if that could be released. It has to be 99.5, 99.9. It has to be accurate. It has to work. You might say, oh, well, the Wii remote didn't really work. Yes, but it worked enough. And they weren't having precision gaming based off of that. And the ones that did have precision gaming mostly failed. But you know what? The Wii Remote worked for what it was needed to do. The Kinect just doesn't work. It's a brilliant idea. It's too ahead of its time. And on top of that, it is annoying. I couldn't put it in my office. There's not enough room for it to work. So I had to put it in a different room. Therefore, I don't play it as much because it's not in the room I want to put it in because of the Kinect. I could probably move it back now since Kinect's kind of dead. But the whole point is that, you know, you shouldn't have to buy a system and then design your house around the system and your world around the system, having to stand up and always jump around. That being said, let's go right into what they showed off. Halo 5 Guardians. Didn't they show this off a couple of years ago? Seems like Halo 5 is out every year. Well, it's actually for reals coming out October 27th, 2015. Again, Halo 5. I'm a huge Bungie fan. I actually know the guys from Bungie back in the day when there were nobodies in Chicago, and I was talking to them. They were coming out with games like Minotaur. They have some of the best shooters of all time. The Marathon series, which, by the way, is just the prelude to the Halo series. A lot of things you see in Halo are actually Marathon. Marathon was the greatest shooter, one of the best of all time, easily the best shooter on the Mac, and they were just the developer for the Mac. I really do like Halo, but over the last few years, you know, again, it's not Bungie anymore. It sort of has fallen from the wayside. So it's like it kind of has a Bungie-type flavor, but it's not being designed by Bungie, and there's something lost in it. It's sort of like the Jurassic Park movies. You know, the first one's done by Steven Spielberg. And then the ones that aren't being done by him or being executive produced by him, they're not really Steven Spielberg movies. Same thing. It's like, well, it's kind of a Bungie. It's not really a Bungie game. Whatever. I'll probably play it. Most people really want to play the multiplayer. But the multiplayer scene has changed a lot over the years. You know, things really aren't the same as where they were when the first Halos came out. I'm going to be curious to see how it pans out. There's a lot of competition. That's all I'm saying. It wasn't back then where it was like sort of Halo was the only kid on the block and there was a few others. Now there's a lot. There's the Calls of Duty. There's Destiny. There's a lot of games out there. So then we have, they showed Fallout 4 again, blah, blah, blah. They did say something that, oh yeah, I forgot to say the Fallout 4 is coming out this November 10th, 2015. I will see it when I believe it. Actually, I probably believe it. That seems like a very specific date. It's probably just enough time that if they need to push it back, they can push it back to before Thanksgiving. But that's sort of the magic date. You want to come out right before or a few weeks before Thanksgiving. You don't really want to come out after Thanksgiving. So that's about as far as I'd say. They might push a little bit more, but it's either going to come out that day and or it's going to get pushed to next year. But they did say that also that the Fallout would come out bundle, blah, blah, blah. Actually, I'm reading the wrong thing. Sorry. So here we go. ReCore was shown. That's a new game that comes out in spring 2016. That actually had a dog in it. It was a robotic dog, but it had this nice robotic dog. I was making jokes, and other people were noticing that. Have you noticed that every single one of these games where you have a companion, it's either a dog or a horse? Witcher 3, you have your horse. Red Dead Redemption, best game, period. You have your horse. A lot of these other games, you get dog, dog meat, dogs, blah, blah, blah. ReCore, though, looks like you can take the core of your dog and then put it into other animals. And there was like a giant robot. And so then the giant robot became sort of a dog. It's being made by the creator of Mega Man and Retro Studios, or the guys who did Metro Prime. Looks fantastic. I don't know how it plays, but it looked really good. It has a good concept, and that's an exclusive. What else did they explain? They had backwards compatibility. A lot of people were cheering this. I don't really get why people cheer backwards compatibility that much. I mean, I kind of get it in the sense that, yes, you have one less system and then you can play all your Xbox 360 games. I just play my Xbox 360 games on my 360. Maybe I'm a mutant. Maybe there's something wrong with me. But that's how I play. I play all my past games on my past consoles. I just have them all hooked up. And I just sort of switch over to them. To me, it's an okay thing. I mean, again, a lot of people were cheering it. I guess maybe that will help in sales, because people that were hesitant to buy an Xbox One because they have a 360, that's probably the main reason they did it, is that they did some market research, because Microsoft does lots of market research, and they found out that, hey, if I can play my old games, would you be more likely to buy an Xbox? And they probably said yes. So they decided, you know what, let's do this. A lot of people also, I was reading on some of the Twitter channels and such, that, oh, you know, this is what makes Xbox now better than PlayStation 4. I disagree. Again, I don't really think it's that big a deal, especially if you have Xbox One games, that means you have Xbox 360 games. That means you have an Xbox 360 somewhere. Actually, I just thought of a reason why you would want to play it. If your Xbox 360 has the red ring of death, that is why you might want to do it. And I'm sure a lot of you have that, because that has happened to me, where it just died. And I actually just bought a new 360 because of that. It died and I didn't bother even getting it fixed. They were so cheap now. We get them used for nothing. They also announced an Elite controller. Looked really cool. You can put paddle shifters on there. You can swap out the controls. It was $150 for one controller. That sort of turned off a lot of people as quickly as they showed it. But I'm sure they'll have a market for it somehow. Again, they're trying to become the elite competitive gaming machine. Let's see. They showed off Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. It comes out in the spring 2016. I, myself, have never played Plants vs. Zombies except at E3. It was moderately fun. I actually don't know anyone who plays it. It looks like an okay game. I don't know. Maybe I'll download it and give it a try. It was actually pretty fun. I do like Plants vs. Zombies a lot. Again, that's really just about EA building up their IP and trying to make Plants vs. Zombies into like a thing. Speaking of EA, they also showed this EA Access. Now, this I found quite intriguing. It only is going to work on the Xbox One, and it is a subscription service. It is the Netflix model, where you subscribe and then you can get games and download them and play them. That is a very, very smart idea. I'm kind of surprised. You know, like obviously things like Gamefly have been around forever, and heck, a lot of you remember renting games from Blockbuster and so forth. But nowadays, you know, having the download capabilities that we do, having a subscription service, it's very dangerous, because, you know, the retailers will get very, the big box retailers, not that there's a lot of them left, but, you know, the ones that are left, they get very, very angry when their own companies are competing with them and they're offering these services. That's why a lot of people are angry with Netflix. There's a lot of people angry with them. But you can't say anything bad about Netflix, because their model works. They are doing extremely well with it. This is the way people are used to getting media. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people start going this way, if EA is sort of the first, and then even people, you know, Sony actually does this as well. I'm probably, some of you are saying this already. Oh yeah, Sony already gives you free games when you sign up for, is it Sony Plus or whatever the subscription service is called. You get free games. This is a little, you know, this is similar, but now it's starting to become a little more mainstream. So it's sort of like, well, and this makes sense because EA is not going to be, they're not going to give away games for free. They're not going to become, they're not giving away games for free. If they do, there's going to be a billion microtransactions. They're a company, they have to make money. So this is sort of the compromise. So we're going to see how that goes. There's a few others. Fresno Motorsports 6 comes out September 15th. Whatever. I mean, I'm not really into the racing car games. Dark Souls 3 was announced, comes out early 2016. I believe it. The Dark Souls games usually seem to come out in wintertime, or I could be wrong on that, but Bloodborne came out in wintertime. I believe I remember Dark Souls 2 came out. From Software is really doing a good job. I've played their games for a long time. You know, they've gotten better and better. They're really learning to iterate their games and really get each one's better than the last. I really like Dark Souls 2 a lot. I really played that game quite a bit. I thought it was extremely well done. Bloodborne, really good, different, but a very good game as well. So, yeah, sign me up for Dark Souls 3. Gigantic showed off a game. Again, it looked like it was sort of a, look up my notes here, sort of was a shooter type game. It sort of looked like a MOBA type game, not too much on it. Gears of War 4, again, holiday 2016. It's funny, they didn't even have to really show anything. That's like, hey, here's some graphics. It's Gears of War. It's coming out. Ta-da. That's all they need to do. Everyone knows what Gears of War is. It's a good game. It's a great game. It's one of the probably my favorite co-op games out there. It's really good. Here we go. HoloLens. Okay, that one was a true surprise. The HoloLens was a true surprise. I didn't expect to see that. And then they showed, you know, they call it HoloLens VR headset. You know, that's their competitor. Everyone's coming out with the HoloLens. And then they showed it with Minecraft. That was definitely one of those, oh my God, what am I looking at moments and what is going on here? Because I didn't quite understand, like, you know, at first I wasn't quite listening to completely, and then you look and you say, okay, I get it. What he sees on the TV is what he's seeing with the VR headset. It looks incredible. I mean, it really looks like a huge game changer. But then again, it's one of those boy who cried wolf. We saw that happen with the Kinect. Kinect looked like a game changer, and it did not work out. So I think a lot of people are being hesitant this time. They'll believe it when they see it. For example, I know everyone loves the Oculus. I might be the one person who puts it on their head. I don't see really. It doesn't look too great to me. Maybe it's just the way my eyes are set up. Who knows? But I just can't really see it yet. You know, the 3D I see, like when you go to, I don't know, Harry Potter in Universal Studios, that's 3D. That looks insane. So again, I really want to try it, put it on and let you know. But I got high hopes. And if they manage to pull it off, then everyone else will be doing catch up. Fable Legends coming out for Christmas. This is one of those games where it's like one person versus four. It's okay. I played it. You know, it's again, they're just kind of rebranding Fable onto a multiplayer type game. You have Ion from DayZ guys. Again, nothing's really shown about that. That was part of sort of their indie program. Again, Sony made a big deal. They have a lot of indie games. Microsoft's kind of catching up, going through their indie stuff. Oh, up next, Rare. The Sea of Thieves, nothing was said about this game. It was a multiplayer game by Rare. Anything by Rare, I'm going to be interested in. And the big one was the Rare Replay. A lot of people seem really, really excited about this. This is 30 games by Rare, and it comes out August 4th. Rare has some of the greatest games of all time. How much of these games I want to replay, because I've already played them to death, I don't know. But then I started to look at the list. Here we go. And these are just sort of the ones that I think are their best games. You have Battletoads, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Grabbed by the Ghoulies, Snake Rattle and Roll, Blast Corps, Perfect Dart, and Jet Force Gemini. That's just off top of my head. That's a lot of good games. and pretty much none of them are really stinkers. They're all solid good games. I would definitely pick this up. Snake Rattle and Roll, probably very few have ever played that. That's a fun game. Came out for, I think, NES way back in the day. Banjo-Kazooie, one of my favorite games of all time, period. Banjo-Tooie, same thing. It's right up there. Conker's Bad Fur Day, again, right up there. One of my favorite games of all time. Blast Corps, also one of my favorite games of all time. That very few people played. N64 game, totally insane. You basically had a truck. I think it was a truck or it was something. It had a nuclear missile on it, and it was going in a straight line, and if it hit anything, it would blow up. And you had to take things like dump trucks and bulldozers and just get everything out of the way so it would keep going. That was the game. That was the entire game. It was crazy, but somehow it worked. And the game was also very, very hard game. It really steeped up the difficulty. And that's one thing about the Rare games. They're kind of all over the place in difficulty. Like Battletoads, to this date, one of the hardest games of all time, period. Still say it's hard. I can only imagine how hard it is now that I'm no longer a teenager with teenager-like reflexes, so I'll give that one a try. So a lot of people are excited about that. I think it was like $30. Seems like a good deal. And they're also going to have some documentaries on the game to show some history. So I'm actually probably more interested in documentaries than the games themselves. And let me just run through the rest of the stuff. Rainbow Six Siege comes out October 16th. Tom Clancy's The Division, March 8th, 2016. Rise of the Tomb Raider, December. As I said, indie titles. But then finally, they had Xbox One Early Access. Okay, I get Early Access is working really well for PC games. I'm kind of stunned they announced this. If you remember, there was a big brouhaha a couple years ago. I believe it was with Rez that there was, if it was one of the indie games on the Xbox 360, that there was all these bugs and they weren't going to release an update. And they said, you know why? Because Microsoft charges $50,000. I think it's $50,000 per update. So every time you want to update the game, you would have to pay Microsoft $50,000. So they're like, you know what? We're not going to update the game. We're not going to come up with an update. I'm not going to spend $50,000 to update my game, which is why everyone's flocking to PC, because it doesn't cost you anything to update your game. So they went from, oh, we're charging you these insane amounts of money for you to update your game, to, hell yeah, we're going to have early access. So the games are going to be alpha tests for you to test. You know, I don't really even like these on PCs right now. I really don't like playing these games. It's sort of, you know, you get them and then it's like, oh, cool concept. And you play the game for a few hours. Then you run out of things to do more likely than not, or there's some bugs in there. And then you don't play the game for a couple of years. But, you know, the developers like it because they think of it. It's sort of like, it's like the stage after Kickstarter. It's like, hey, we need some money. We'll pre-release the game. If it does well, we make some money, you know, and obviously, you know, who's the most famous one that did this is, of course, Minecraft. But Minecraft also did it in such a way that they changed the pricing. The pricing was really low when it first came out. And then, and there was a lot of game there. There was a lot of game when it first came out. Granted, they've added a lot, but just with the basic Minecraft, the core Minecraft game was there pretty much from, not necessarily exactly day one, but very early in the game. And there was a lot of updates. He was releasing new code constantly. And, you know, it was a really iterative process. I've seen a lot of these other games. They don't release code that often. They don't really update them so much. And that's on the PC. On the Xbox One, again, I'm hesitant. Again, I see it kind of as a money grab. You know, Xbox games are, well, the Xbox and the Windows 10 platform are going to be very similar. So I presume they're doing it because they're probably going to say, hey, if you're doing indie games on Steam anyhow and you're releasing them early access, come to our indie store and release it here too. You know, you have nothing to lose. We'll give you more money. And hopefully they're going to say, yeah, and we won't charge you $50,000 for an update. So a lot of people were hesitant. I'm hesitant too. It's one thing if your PC crashes. It's another thing if your Xbox crashes. So there we go. Oh, let me take a little break. Whew. All right. There was a lot going through and I still got Sony Nintendo and some questions. All right. I'm going to pick it up a little because, as usual, my shows go pretty long. I'm trying to actually keep them a little shorter. Yeah. That worked out really well. So next up, Sony. So if Microsoft seemed like they had a really solid show and they were doing catch up, you have Sony who just seemed like they set off a nuclear bomb. They just were giving out. It was sort of like wish fulfillment. That's the closest thing I would say about Sony. They started off the show, The Last Guardian. Here's a game that was first shown 6 years ago. Never heard a thing about it ever again. No one knew anything about it. It showed up. It was a true surprise because every year it's rumored and every year it doesn't show up. So it was sort of like, hey, look, it's going to show up, then show up. Hey, look, it's going to show up, then show up. So enough of that. And then finally it showed up. And not only did it show up, but it looked gorgeous. You have the guy who created Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. If you have not played those games, you must go buy them right now and play them. Of the two, Ico is good. Shadow of the Colossus is insane. It's a masterpiece. You have to go get it. It holds up now. Doesn't matter what platform it was released on. It still looks beautiful, and it holds up. It is just an amazing. It's almost a game that is transcendent. It is one of those type. It's not even a game. It's an experience. It is really a beautiful game. And also, do not look online. Do not figure out. Do not read cheat sheets on how to beat the Colossi. You'll always figure it out. It's sort of like Portal, where you'll sit there figuring, thinking, how am I going to get through this? How am I going to get through this? And then it clicks and you figure it out. Last Guardian, the ultimate dog, a baby griffin. You win. It's better than a horse. It's better than a dog. The baby griffin, again, if you look at the animation and just the facial expressions, I've had dogs my whole life. It looks like a dog. It really feels like a dog. And that's the other thing, is that it just the way the game, that's what really makes these games so amazing. Yes, there's great gameplay, but it really makes you feel something. And there's very few games out there that do that. And everyone who talks about gaming passionately talks about the way they feel about gaming. People who play League of Legends always talk about that. They're very vehement about it, both good and bad. People who play World of Warcraft, of course, that's one of the best parts about it, is going into a raid and beating a boss with all of your friends. People who still talk about Final Fantasy and, you know, like surprise endings and surprise killings, so I won't say anything. You know, again, feeling. So that's really what makes in Portal and all these other games, that really makes the game resonate, is that you have a strong feeling that instantly gets locked into your memory that you'll remember forever. Well, Shadow of the Colossus and Ico have that in spades, and people are like, well, the puzzle looked really easy in The Last Guardian. You don't get it. That's not the point of the game. The point of the game is not so much as challenge. It is story. It is feeling. It is connection. And that is what The Last Guardian looked like to me. I'm very, very excited. This is one of those must-buy for me and all my friends. Looks fantastic. Reason alone to buy PlayStation 4. Next, then, they showed another one out of nowhere. Horizon Zero Dawn. I, again, was sort of floored when I saw this. It was beautiful. You have this. It didn't even start off just the trailer. They have a beautiful story. They're showing, oh, there's this really advanced civilization. And then something bad happened to them. And now there's people running around with Stone Age tools, hunting dinosaurs that are mechanical robots. So I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I don't know what I'm looking at, but it looks insane. It looks beautiful, and it looked brilliant. Again, it's with a caveat that you have to actually play it. But I will say, you know, it just looks like a real it looks like they're taking a lot of chances, and they're doing something really out there. And on top of that, a female protagonist, which is really nice to see. That was one thing you saw a lot of. You saw a lot of female protagonists. What else? We had Hitman that comes out on December 8th. It's my birthday. Just Hitman. Hitman, they're coming out with they had a movie, and they're going to come out with a few more things, so I can understand why they're bringing back that franchise. You have Street Fighter V. Again, spring 2015. A lot of people excited about that. No Man's Sky looks like an Eve-type game to me. Those, you know, with Eve or, you know, Freelance or any of those type of games. Beautiful looking game. It actually kind of reminded me a little bit of Spore in a way. It's like procedural worlds, trillions of procedural worlds. You never see the same place twice if you don't, you know, you never could explore the entire galaxy. The problem with those is that they can get boring. They can get repetitive. You know, there's something to be said about, you know, right now, roguelikes are really big. Procedural generated maps are very big. And that can get kind of boring. So we'll have to see in the final game just how much they can fit into it. Next up was Dreams. Again, I don't know what I was kind of looking at. Dreams just looked incredible. It was by the same guys, Media Molecule. The game just looked sort of like a waking dream. It looked like claymation type of animation. It just, again, it's hard to describe. I would say go see the trailer and you'll see what I'm talking about. There's probably not a lot of gameplay to it. It's probably more of a Minecraft type game. Nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of room for those type of games. And again, it's really a game about expression and feeling. And it looked just beautiful. Destiny, The Taken King is an expansion of Destiny. Comes with September 15th. I actually want to do a show one day, and I have friends who do nothing except play Destiny for hours a day, every single day. And I don't get it. I really don't. Of course, one thing in common with every single one of these guys is none of them have ever played an MMO before. And I keep telling them, none of them, not a single one. They've never played an MMO. I have friends in my MMO companies that, let's just say, they go on and on and on. I've had lunches with these guys where they go on and on and on laughing because they say, oh, you see all this stuff in Destiny? We did that 10 years ago. These are all things that we saw when we were starting out in the MMO world. You know, from a game design point of view, they find it very funny. They find that they're making all these mistakes. Yet it's doing really, really well. I'm not ripping on Destiny. I think it's a fun game, but it is an extremely frustrating game. And they seem to go out of their way to make it difficult for you to do what you want to do. I love Bungie. I really wish and hope they change it and fix it so I could play it. Because, again, I really don't have the patience to sort of jump through the hoops they want you to jump through just to play the game. Because there's too many games out there. There's just too many games, too many free games. There's just too much to do. Anyhow, that's coming out. It's got a lot of good press. It looks pretty good for those who like Destiny. Assassin's Creed Syndicate comes out October 23rd. Another Assassin's Creed game. Looks beautiful. Blah, blah, blah. Firewatch. Firewatch comes out this year. And again, it had a very unique style. You sort of play a, I don't know if it was a park ranger or a firefighter or something in between. I actually don't know a lot about that game. I was looking at it and watching it a bit. But everyone I know I was talking to later said that who actually played it in a significant amount of time said it had a really good story. It's kind of like an Uncharted game, not Uncharted in the sense that it's open world action like that, but that it has a very good story. It has good, strong voiceovers, and it is a really unique setting. And that comes out this year, so I'm sure we'll see a lot about it. And that kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't read about that before. Final Fantasy VII Remake, everyone was going insane for. This is another one of those, like, the rare remakes. Like, everyone's like, whoa, Final Fantasy. You know what? I played Final Fantasy VII. I have too many games to play it again. I will probably watch some Twitch streamers play it. I will probably not play it myself. It did look incredible. And for those of you who never played Final Fantasy, you can now play it. And you can play the definitive version. So, again, I get it. I know why they're doing it. It's probably not for me. Then you have World of Final Fantasy. You had Batman Arkham Knight, which is an odd one to show since it comes out like on July 23rd. That comes out pretty soon. You have the Project Morpheus, or is it June 23rd? Well, it comes out pretty soon. You have Project Morpheus. That was their VR headset. They said it's getting close. They didn't really show anything off for it. They kind of said they were coming out with some games for it. Again, it was sort of nebulous. You have Call of Duty Black Ops 3, November 6th. It's funny, that used to, like, the Call of Duty games used to, like, lead off these showcases, and then it was, like, all the way in the back. And it's odd. It's like Call of Duty, Black Ops 3. It's like, really? They're starting to run out of titles here when you have to do a subset of a subset. You have Disney Infinity 3. A lot of people have high hopes for this one. It's funny, when Disney last year was telling my kids, this is the year of Star Wars, you'll see. Everything's going to be Star Wars. I almost wish I was wrong, because boy, it is the year of Star Wars in every way, shape, and form. I get it. I'm a big Star Wars fan, biggest fan you could imagine. Love Star Wars, seen it a trillion times. I'm already going to see it opening night. My friends are renting out an entire theater, bringing the kids, bringing all their friends. Can't wait. But at the same time, there's a lot of Star Wars games coming out. And there's a lot. Disney Infinity, again, it looks like Disney Infinity 1 was not that great. Disney Infinity 2 was not that great. Hopefully they finally figured it out for Disney Infinity 3. Speaking of Star Wars Battlefront, November 17th. This of all the Star Wars games, probably the one I will play. Battlefront is a solid game. The game looks fantastic. You can play anything. You know, you can play any aspect of the game. This is how the Battlefront games work. I'm not exactly sure how it works if you want to play Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker. As I said, I think everyone's going to want to do that, because who wants to play Stormtrooper when you can play one of the main bad guys, or Luke, or anyone that has a freaking lightsaber, for God's sakes. I want the guy with the lightsaber. That is who I want. What else do we have here? Oh, yes, this little game called Shenmue 3. That also brought down the house, a game that's been rumored for 15 years that's going to come out. And that was weird because, so I guess Sega gave the rights back to the original creator. And then I guess Sony said, hey, we will pay for the game, I guess, as long as you can prove. I didn't talk to anyone about this, but I guess as long as you can prove there's a, you know, there's a demand for it. So they did the Kickstarter. And the Kickstarter, I think, was more of a, let's show that there's demand. Let's see that people will buy it, which is what a lot of Kickstarters have become. And it's kind of scary. It sort of leaked over into the corporate world. It was $2 million. It actually crashed Kickstarter multiple times. It passed it in one night. It's currently at $3.1 million. Considering the original games were the most expensive games ever made, and they were in the realms, these are games that were something like 20 years old for the Dreamcast that were over $50 million back then. That's a lot of money. Even now, that's a lot. And that was insane. So $2 or $3 million is not going to be the final budget. You have to think the final budget is going to be $50 to $100. I'm kind of surprised. Here was the one I really couldn't believe, and someone brought this up. Why didn't Microsoft take this game? This is a game that a lot of people knew about. The IP was up for grabs. Why didn't Microsoft just open up the vaults, get this game, put it on the Xbox? Probably because it doesn't really match their demographic at all, but that was actually one of the reasons why maybe you put it on the Xbox, so that people that normally wouldn't buy an Xbox will get an Xbox, because this game had huge demand. I'm really kind of stunned it's coming out for just PlayStation, from what I know. It probably can come out for everything, and it'll probably come out for PC. And then finally, you have Uncharted 4, Thieves End. Uncharted, it's a funny franchise. I remember I did a review, one of the first shows of Uncharted 1, and no one knew about it. And I was blown away. When that game came out, the gameplay was really solid. The voiceovers, to date, the best voiceovers I have ever heard in video games, bar none. Fantastic. And sure enough, this game, you know, became the monster hit it is now. The game looks like an Uncharted game. It looks fantastic. The graphics are sick. It's really bright, really colorful. The same, camaraderie between the characters. Fantastic voiceovers. What do you want? It's an Uncharted game. You know what you're going to get. And, of course, that will do gangbusters. Finally, Nintendo. So we have Nintendo up. Okay, Nintendo was bizarre, to say the least. A lot of people disappointed with the Nintendo afterwards. I didn't think it was that bad, because I also wasn't expecting much. And when I was watching Nintendo, I felt like I was, it was like a drug experience. Not that I've ever done drugs, but it was weird, man. You have puppets in the beginning. You had these cat paws building Super Mario levels. What? You had really strange pacing. And of course, because it was a video conference, it was a video, there was no audience, there was no live energy. So it was just a bizarre conference overall. I liked it. In fact, the puppets were amazing. They were just beautiful. And they said, you know, Jim Henson's Workshop. I actually worked with Jim Henson's Workshop once. If you find, there's a picture of me with one of the chickens. They wouldn't let me, actually my hand's in it. It's on one of my accounts. I think it's on my LinkedIn. Is that you're not allowed to actually, I wasn't allowed to touch Miss Piggy or any of the main ones, but they had lots of chickens. They're like, oh yeah, you want to do a chicken? So I put my hand in, I was walking around with it. It was awesome. And then actually we were asking how much they cost. And I believe a Muppet type character, it was 20 grand per Muppet. I think a chicken was 8 grand. So if you want an authentic chicken, I actually know where you can get them, and they ain't cheap, but they will make them for you. Actually, I don't think they'll make those exact ones. I think they'll make sort of ones in the genre, because they can't sell Henson puppets. But it was really fascinating, and they wear out fast. That's one thing I noticed. They said these puppets, they cost a fortune, and man, they wear out quick. So with that being said, probably those puppets alone, probably 100 grand of puppets right there easily. So I really liked it. I thought it was fun. That's a million. Those are looping gifts till the end of time. They showed Star Fox Zero that's coming out this holiday season. So of all of them, again, I'll say back, Microsoft, they felt like they were doing catch up a little bit. They were trying to show, here's all this Xbox games, here's all this Xbox exclusivity, here's all of these really good titles. Then you have Sony, who was doing wish fulfillment, that was just showing stuff everyone's hoping for and wished for that was actually coming to Sony. And Nintendo was all about reinforcing the brand. That was their message. They're going to show, hey, here's all of our properties that you know and love, and we're coming out with games with them. They showed Star Fox Zero. They showed Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes. Again, not a brand new Legend of Zelda game for the Wii U, which a lot of people are disappointed with, but I actually like the DS games better. Minish Cup, one of the greatest, if not my favorite Zelda game of all time. I like all the handheld Zelda games. I actually, Sacrilege, kind of like them better than the console games, most likely. And Triforce Heroes, no one played the original Four Swords. Zelda Four Swords was way ahead of its time, way ahead of time. But it was impossible to play. You had to connect. You had to physically connect your Game Boys together. Who the heck would do that? Nowadays, it's online. It's Wi-Fi. You can play with friends instead of four. It's three, which is a lot easier to get together. So, you know, I'm real excited about that game. And I don't know why some people seem to be, what the real one? I'm like, you know what? You're going to get that one. You're going to play it. And we're going to have a fun time. There's also a Hyrule Warriors Legends stuff to save for the 3DS. Again, that's sort of like a combat game with Zelda characters. Whatever. Zelda comes out 2016. Fire Emblem Fates. Fire Emblem games are some of my favorite games. I'm looking forward to that one. A lot of people love those games. Hopefully they have feet. The last Fire Emblem game drove me absolutely bonkers. I couldn't even play it because they didn't have feet. Come on, man. Give them feet. I couldn't stand them watching them walking around on like stilts. To this day, I can't. It drives me insane. Cut scenes. Come out with a patch. Something. So it looked like they had feet in the preview that I saw. Thank God. And Xenoblade Chronicles X. The multiplayer game. Xenoblade. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if I'm going to play it that much, but I still want to try it at least. It comes out December 5th. There's a lot on this. This has been out for Japan for a while, so you can find a lot of information on it. It looks bizarre, looks strange, looks like fun. And that was kind of it. There wasn't a lot coming. Oh, that's not true. I forgot. There's a few more things coming out. That's it. Oh, yeah, I forgot. What else do we have here? Oh, yeah, there was this other thing called Metroid Prime Federation Force, which is a lot of people like, what the heck is that? That was a four-player co-op game that comes out in 2016. Again, reinforcing the brand. Here we go. Here's your Metroid Prime game. Up here's your Animal Crossing game. They had an Animal Crossing themed party game with amiibos called Amiibo Festival. It comes, you know, obviously requires amiibo. It's sort of like a board game. They had a few more. I forgot about this. Level 5 had a game. Yo-Kayo Watch, which seemed like a Pokemon-type game. Anything by Level 5 is usually pretty good, so I'll at least check it out, although I'm not a big Pokemon player. I know Sacrilege. Sacrilege. Not a big Pokemon player. Sorry. This one I'm excited for, a new Mario and Luigi Paper Jam game. I love the Mario and Luigi RPGs on the DS's. And the Game Boys, I think those games are really, really well done. All the Mario RPG games are extremely well done. I like that style of play. I like the combat systems. I like the stories. They have really funny characters. I'm looking forward to that one big time. Mario Tennis for the Wii U. Again, Mario Tennis. How can you go wrong? Mario Tennis always sells really well, and it's always a very solid game. Oh, Skyland Superchargers. Now, again, they were also emphasizing the amiibos. The amiibos have been a huge hit. And actually, it's been kind of also, they've been a little obnoxious because they're very hard to find, especially exclusive ones. They're doing really well. So, again, Skyland Superchargers is coming out with Skylander figures that will work with amiibos as well as Skylanders. Very smart idea. I'm kind of surprised no one else jumped and stealing that. I guess Xbox wouldn't because that's not really their main audience, but I'm surprised that PlayStation didn't. But you know what? Anything that Nintendo can do to reinforce the brand. And finally, you had, Super Mario Maker. Super Mario Maker comes out September 11th, 2015. that will be a huge hit. As simple as that. A lot of people are going to want to make their own Mario levels. You know, it's people are already doing it right now. There's a lot of, like, if I watch, that's actually one of the things I usually watch on Twitch, is I'll watch people playing some of the hacked levels, some of those impossible levels that are just 100%, you know, you can't do them. They make like Meat Boy look easy. These games are just ridiculous. And these guys do it. I don't know how they do it. So you're going to be seeing a lot of these levels that are just one torture level after another. And oh yeah, and finally, Yoshi's Woolly World. That has Ambio support, of course. Now they're starting to get the hang of it. With the Ambos, when the Ambios came out, I really didn't like them. Yeah, they're cool, but I didn't really see the point of them. But now you're starting to add things like Yoshi's Woolly World. If you have different figures and you add them, then Yoshi will change into that person. There you go. Now you're starting to use it. That's the way it should be used. It looked awesome. I actually love Kirby. I've played that Kirby game way too much, so I am probably going to be getting Yoshi's Woolly World quite a bit. Again, everyone was kind of disappointed with Nintendo. I don't know why. Look, they are the only people who support their console. The 3DS has outside support, but the Wii U, think about it. It's them. It's like they are all by themselves. And here's the crazy part. I play the Wii U probably more than anything else. Actually, not probably. I do. I have PCs number one, then Wii U, then PlayStation 4, and then Xbox One. And I was talking to someone about this, and they said, you know, you realize why. And I said, yeah. It took me a second to think about it, but I realized why. It's because almost every game that comes out for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox comes out for the PC. And I have a killer PC, so I'm going to always play it on the PC. Witcher 3 came out. I'm playing it on the PC. I'm not getting it for anything else. You know, unless it comes out as an exclusive, I'm going to be playing the PC version. So that's why my PlayStation 4 and my Xbox don't get a lot of love, because there's just everything's out. I can just play on my PC. The exception to that is Nintendo. Nintendo games only come out for Nintendo. They only come out for the Wii U, so you have to get them and you have to play them. There's no PC versions of pretty much every single one of those games. So unless you're running an illegal emulator, you're playing it on the Wii U, hence I'm playing my Wii U quite a bit, because there's a lot of good games. You know, they don't come out with a lot of games, but it's not about quantity. I remember PlayStation 1. PlayStation 1 had more games than probably anything in the history of the world. They were all garbage. Not all, but 99% of them. There was a lot of garbage. There was a lot of really, really, really bad games. Just because they have a million games doesn't mean they're all good games. So I thought it was fine. Really, Nintendo is sort of biding its time till next year when they're going to announce their new platform, and they're going to have a whole bunch of, they'll have a lot of mobile games. Next year is going to be their big year. This was just them reinforcing the brand, saying, hey, look, there's a lot of games coming out for things that you love. You know, Star Fox, Animal Crossing, Super Mario, Metroid, Legend of Zelda, we got it all, you know. So, hey, it's enough. It's enough to keep you busy. It's not going to be enough to probably beat out the other consoles, but look, one or two games is all I really need. I don't need to have 20 awesome games. I won't have time to play them anyhow. Whew. Oh, and finally, let's talk about Nintendo and the World Championships. That was awesome. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was probably besides, I mean, the conferences are conferences, but I would say it was probably my favorite thing. I was watching with my kids. They know all the games. They were cheering them on. You know, it's a great way to sell games. And when I was a kid, there was a game, there was a TV show called, I think, Starcade. When I was a kid, this was the show. And all the show was you had kids that would answer questions about, of course, it was all arcade games, and they would have them answer questions about these games. They would get points, and then they would have to play arcade games and sort of get to certain levels or get a certain amount of points or get to a certain part of the game, and then they would move on and get more points, and eventually you would win. And I think you even won like an arcade game at the end. When I was a kid, I never missed an episode. I used to think and dream of ways, because I was in New York. I believe it was shot in California. I used to come up with these elaborate ways to figure out how I could get my parents to go to California so we can play. I can get on the show, because I, of course, would have destroyed these kids. I knew every answer. I knew every arcade game. I used to summer in Atlantic City. Atlantic City is the king of the entire world of arcade games. If anyone remembers the 80s, there's more arcade games in Atlantic City than probably anywhere on the planet Earth. I used to play every single game, man. That thing really brought back memories. And that's what the Nintendo World Championships was like. It was, you know what, they should do it every year. And it makes sense because, again, they were ahead of the time. This is something they show on Twitch. People like to see these games. You know, it felt a little strange that you'd have individuals and playing games like Splatoon. I get it. They want to show off these games, but it's unfair that you lose in a group game when it really should be an individual game. But the finals, when you actually got to see them play Super Mario Maker and those levels, worth watching. You should watch. These levels are torturous beyond belief. It was brilliant because it showed off the capabilities of Super Mario Maker in a competitive setting. And that's really, you know, that really was probably better than the conference. They should just do that and show off the games and say, hey, look, we're going to have a competition and we're going to have you guys play these games that no one's ever played before. So, whew, there we go. That's my E3 wrap up. As for what I'm thinking of E3, E3 is sort of an odd beast. E3 has sort of, I think, it's not outlived its usefulness, but I've been going to a lot of them. I've gone to 19 of them. When E3 first came out, there was nothing like it. It was a huge hit. It was a monster hit. It was the biggest trade show, like I think of all time, one of them. It was just insane. And it got bigger and bigger every year. But here's the thing. When E3 first came out, it was like free to go. Then it was like $50. Then it was like $500. Then it was like $1,000. So unless you're an insider, you had to pay to go. And then, if you remember, E3 kind of died. It disappeared. Real quick reasons. EA, I believe. It was EA and Sony had really bad showings, had really, really bad experiences at E3. That was the year there was a million bloggers at E3. This was, I think, 2006 or 2007. It was right around there. And they just got crushed in the media. And they had really bad, they had bad E3s and they had bad message. And they basically said they weren't going anymore because they were like, you know what? You can't have all these, you know, people that basically they couldn't control. They blamed the messengers. They blamed the bloggers. There was a billion bloggers at that E3. I remember everyone who had anything could have been invited and gotten a press pass. And they all reported. And you know what? They got killed. If you didn't have a good E3, you got killed in the media that year. So they said, you know what? I remember the next year, it was only invite the people that had to be invited by the game companies themselves, because at the time E3 decided who would get a press pass, but they said, no, we want to control it. And Microsoft was kind enough to give me my press pass so I can go. And it was terrible. I mean, it was dead. It was a few people there. It was in a really bad location. Who cares? Then the next year they tried to do it and the same location. It was like 1,000 people there. It was ridiculous. There was no excitement. It was boring. And it actually, and then there was no coverage. So, you know what? No one was happy. So it just died. I mean, E3, for all intents and purposes, E3 was dead. And I thought, like, well, the days of like going through these conferences and having big announcements is over. Because no one cared. There was no coverage. There was no one there. There was the spectacle was part of E3. And when you remove the spectacle, no one wanted to care about E3. Even if they still had the same conferences, even if they had the same games, it just became a trade show that no one cared about. And then finally they brought it back. But by then the damage was kind of done. And since then, like this year, the prices for the tickets went down. By then, things like New York Comic Con came out. Started to do gangbusters. There's now 1,000 Comic Cons all around the United States. Sort of the geek itch was getting scratched, so if you would. And E3 now has gone from, there used to be 3 halls. Katana Hall was my favorite hall, completely filled, to 2 halls, and they're kind of filled. In fact, some of them are half filled. So I'd say it went from 3 halls packed to 1.5 halls. And they went from tickets that were $500,000 to they're giving away tickets to people on the street. And, you know, it's like, it's a spectacle. It's still amazing, but it's not the way it used to be. And it has too much competition now. The conferences are really what make it special. I don't think E3 is going anywhere. I just think it's transforming. It's going from an industry-only event to sort of an industry and open, you know, like a gamer event. And I wouldn't be surprised in a few more years if it was all gamers. Like, anyone can go to it. And it was completely free or just a couple bucks. And it turns more into a Comic-Con than a, you know, a media-only event or a... it's just for, you know, game developers. And that's kind of what GDC turned into. GDC, Game Developers Conference, I used to go to, it would be 2,000 people. Now you go to, it's 25,000 people. You know, the gaming, it's, the industry is kind of just changing. So, you know, E3, it's fun. It's good. I enjoy it. But if you don't go to E3, don't feel left out. Just go to a local game convention, a big one, whether it's a Gen Con or Origins or one of the, you know, New York or San Diego Comic Con. You'll see a lot of the same things. These booths get reused. The games get reused. The kiosks get reused. And when I go to these, I see the exact same things I saw at E3. So don't feel left out. And not only that, everything you see on TV, when I go and I see these behind-the-scene coverage, it's the exact same conference, the exact same playthrough that they show on GameSpot. It's the exact same thing. So big deal. You get to see it live. I get to wait in a line for an hour in a noisy, stuffy hallway and then go into a room that has a billion air conditioners because it's going to be 2,000 degrees in there. They show a demo for 20 minutes and then you leave. You can just turn on your computer and just jump to it and see it right away. It's the exact same thing. The stuff that's behind closed doors, they don't show anyone. That's never public, and they can only write about it. So you're not missing anything. In other news, real quick, there was Dota 2 Reborn, which was announced and launched this week. Dota 2 looked really good. The Reborn looked really good. I just tried it out last night for a bit. I liked it a lot. Really smooth engine, looks really nice. I'm kind of going long here, so I won't go into them versus League of Legends, but I can tell you a lot that Dota 2 is starting to really, first they were doing catch up, and then they were even, now they're starting to surpass League of Legends. There's reasons for it. League of Legends, I know the guys at Riot, I can explain. Not going to do it today. Other news, Hearthstone came out with Tavern Brawl. It is awesome. Hearthstone is, I play a lot of Hearthstone. It's a fun game. Tavern Brawl, worth the price of mission alone, free to play, crazy game. If anyone wants to hit me up, I'm on Blizzard. You can look me up as Stone Snake. I will play you. I'm very good at Hearthstone, I will say. So if you want to play, let me know, hit me up with a friend request. And with that, let's get into questions. So some people wrote me some questions through Twitter. I'll read them real quick. They said here, it was Zombie Shakespeare wrote me and said, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Half-Life 3 and why Valve doesn't seem to care about releasing it. Very simple. Valve does not care about releasing Half-Life 3 because they don't care about it. They don't need it. They don't really want it. I will give you a real quick history of Valve and why they did what they did. Long story short, 19 years ago, I'm in E3 in Atlanta, and Valve showed this game called Half-Life. It was the hit of the show. People were amazed at it. Something else, back then in the E3, they had conferences. They had actual conferences. You'd sit in rooms, and they would give lectures and talk to people about it. It was awesome. I actually sat down in one of the lectures, and it was being presented by Valve, and they were talking about this thing called the Steam Engine, and I had kind of no idea what they were talking about at the time. This was 19 years ago. They were talking about how they were going to release games online. It was very technical. Actually, it was really made for programmers. They were going through technical specs, how the games are being released, how the backbone was set up, and so forth. And back then, people had dial-up modems. So the idea of having an online platform, and there were a couple out there. There was one called Ten, I believe. There was a few out there. Remember, Sega Genesis kind of had one, like dial-up. But you just can't play online games with dial-up. Even with those sizes back then, they were too big. You just couldn't do it. So it was sort of pie in the sky. It was interesting. But that was 19 years ago. So they always had this idea. We come forward a few years. Half-Life comes out, one of the biggest games of all time. And something happens. So in the game industry, you have this thing where you can release a game, you being the developer, the publisher releases the game and you get a percentage of the money. So think of it this way, is that, you know, the publisher releases the game for $40, maybe $22 is split between the publisher and the developer. The publisher might keep, you know, 2/3 of it or even 3/4 of it, and the other part goes to the developer. So the way it works is that when a game is made, the publisher will give the developer money up front that goes against their future profits. So follow me for a second. So say you have a game, say it costs $1 million. We'll just say easy number. So whatever, Activision. Activision says, hey, you know what? We'll give you $1 million. You make the game, and then they make the game. They make it for $1 million. Say they stay on budget. Say they stay on time. The game comes out. And then what Activision will do is then the first thing they do is they recoup their losses. Now, not every single contract works like this, but how most of them work is that they'll recoup their losses. They'll get back the $1 million. And then a lot of these contracts will say, oh, we also have to recoup all of our spending costs. We have to recoup all the flights to E3 and all the conferences we went to and all the press and everything else we do. And that's a couple more $1 million. So before you know it, the game has to make millions and millions and sell hundreds of thousands, not millions of copies before the developer gets a dime, because the publisher has to make back all their money and then some. And only then do they start saying, okay, now we're going to give you money because the game's doing so well. And even that can take a long time. If you want to read, there's an article about Peter Molyneux wrote about when he first made Populous for EA, and that was a gargantuan hit. He had to wait 9 months before he got paid a penny. And he didn't even know if he was ever going to get paid. So imagine you're sitting there every day, not even knowing when or where the money's coming from and if it's ever coming, because they have to reconcile the books. They have to, you know, figure out how much money is being made. The publisher does everything in their power to not give the developer any money whatsoever. Why does this matter? I'll tell you in a sec. So the thing is, there's a loophole. And the loophole in these contracts is that if the developer sells the game, if the developer sells the game on their own, they can keep the profits or a higher percentage of the profits because they're selling it instead. So that is sort of the inception of Steam, because Valve was kind of thinking ahead, and you got to give them credit. It's like, wait, if we sell the game instead of, I believe, Sierra Online, who did the first one, then we keep more money, if not all the money. So we should sell the game. And this was a loophole that was around forever because no one thought anything of it. Well, after Half-Life came out, the company that published it went out of business. And Half-Life 2, if you remember, came out. Really, Half-Life 2 came out, and the Orange Box and Portal all at the same time, and Team Fortress 2. And really, it came out not so much to promote Half-Life 2, but it was a promotion of Steam and Valve in general. Since then, they make most of their money on microtransactions. That is why Team Fortress 2 has a billion hats. They make insane amounts of money in hats. Now they make an insane amount of money just on badges. And obviously, Dota 2, that's where they make a ton of money on Dota 2. They make a lot of money on the games in general. But really, these games were ways for Valve to sort of get Steam and their name out there. And it was a hugely successful campaign. To this date, Team Fortress 2 is still being played. To this date, everyone still talks about Portal. And to this date, everyone talks about Half-Life 2. So what happened to Half-Life 3? I don't know. If it ever does come out, expect it's going to have probably a multiplayer version. It's going to probably have a heavily microtransaction version to the game. But you know what? They're in no big rush. They're making money hand over fist. They don't need to come out with anything. To be honest, they didn't even update the Valve engine. I know guys who worked on it for years. They just left it by itself. And Valve is a weird company. Like, until recently, if you wanted to get a refund or had a problem with the game, good luck. Nothing happened. the last few years, they start to get some competition. They're starting to see Twitch. They're starting to see the writing on the wall. They're realizing, you know what? You just can't sit here and collect the money forever. We have to actually start spending some money and get smart about it. Now they have, they just released, you know, you can get refunds, which a lot of people are actually pretty upset about in the indie game world. They have a Twitch competitor. You know, they're really starting to get smarter with the platform, and they're starting to actually optimize it a bit. So again, unless there's a reason for Half-Life 3 to either really increase Valve's foothold in the industry or give them a way to make more money, I don't expect it to come out because it really doesn't fit into the Team Fortress 2 Dota 2 type model. It just doesn't. So sorry, that's probably why it's never going to come out. Or if it does, it's going to be a little different than you expect. I hope it comes out one day. I truly hope it does. I don't know if it will. I'll ask around. I'll ask some of my friends. All my friends always know. Everyone knows who everyone's working on, even though you're not supposed to. So I can ask around, see if any of my friends know anything, if they're working on it. Next is from Dan B. Ham. He says, welcome back. How much life is left on the Wii U? Will the new open world Zelda be on the Wii U? So how much life is left on the Wii U? Probably 2 more years. You have this year, you have next year, and then they're going to announce with the NX. So probably 1 or 2 more years at most. And then the new version will, you know, the new platform will come out. The, will Zelda be on the Wii U? Maybe. I would probably guess not. I would, if I, you know, they're really, I'd be stunned. If they are going to release it, they'll probably release 2 versions. Actually, I don't even think they would do that. I think if they release it for the Wii U, I'd be pretty surprised at this point. If the NX is coming out, okay, here we go. If the NX is coming out within 2 years, then I think Zelda's going to be on that. If it's going to come out in a few more years, like 4 or 5, then definitely Zelda will be out because they need games for the Wii U to keep going. But if not, don't expect to see it anytime soon. And you know what? But don't fret. There's a new Zelda coming out for the DS. 3 Swords. Come on, play that. That looks awesome. So there you go. Finally, I have Ray Dancer, Don at Ray Dancer. Do you think choosing a single VR option will be difficult, at least for us poor folk? Yes and no. I think a lot of it will, it's 2 things. One, how well the hardware comes out. Because unlike the Kinect, in which there was no competition, and when that thing came out, everyone was amazed, but when they used it, it sucked. It didn't work, and there was nothing to compete against it. There really wasn't. I mean, yeah, Sony kind of came out with stuff. There was no competition. I'll just leave it at that. And, you know, so, but now in the VR world, there's competition, and these are some serious competition that's coming out. You have Microsoft, you have Sony, you have Facebook, and you have other people that aren't even announcing things. But there's going to be competition. Competition is always a good thing. That means they're gonna, they have to, they can't just release it and have people buy it. Theirs has to be the best, which is one of the reasons why Minecraft was bought by Microsoft, because they knew they were working on this VR technology, and they saw Minecraft and VR is going to work really, really well. Same reason Oculus was bought out, is that the guys Facebook, they're thinking, you know what, Facebook and being able to hang out with friends, talk to them, do FaceTiming or doing, you know, chats or online, you know, sort of sessions, that's going to become a thing. So that's where they're going with it. I have a feeling, just wait. If you don't have a lot of money and you want to get, quote, the winner, then just wait and see what comes out and also see what you play. You know, like if the Microsoft one comes out and it looks really good and you play a lot of Minecraft, then get that one. You know, that's the one you're probably going to want to get. So again, we haven't really seen anything from Sony, but figure in a year or two we'll start seeing them, and then we'll all be able to decide. Sort of like iPhone versus Android versus Windows Phone. You know, get the one you like. They're all pretty good. You know, they all have advantages, they all have disadvantages. I myself have the iPhone. I have a lot of friends with Androids. I even have a lot of friends with Windows Phones. And I have to say, the Windows Phones are actually pretty darn nice. They just were the last ones to the party, but they're actually pretty nice phones. I actually like them more than the Android phones, but again, you know, it's really just about whatever you like, and I think you'll be in the same boat for the VRs. That's all the questions I have. If you want me to answer a question on the next show, just send it to me at GamingSteve. That's my Twitter handle. You can also just write me, contact@GamingSteve.com, or you can even send it to me through Facebook. You can find me on Facebook, GamingSteve. And Whew, that was a long show. We're about an hour and a half in. That was a lot. As usual, I keep going and going and going, and I don't even take a break. I just do one long show.
Game and Steve's final thoughts.
So a few things for next time. A contest. I said I had a contest. The contest is as follows. As you hear in the Gaming Steve opening and closing, I have these little segments where they'll say, Gaming Steve, the guy who dated Zelda and dumped her, or the guy who, you know, took courses with Gordon Friedman, or so forth. I have all these little catchphrases at the beginning and the end of all my shows. I am going to record new ones. I'm going to do a whole new set of catchphrases. I need catchphrases. I need them now because I'm going to gather them all together. I'll tell who won, and then I'm going to get them all recorded, and I'm going to throw them into the show. So if you want to send me a catchphrase that you think would be good, you can send them to me through, again, Twitter at Gaming Steve. You can send it to me at Facebook. Best probably bet of all the places, go to the Gaming Steve forum. Let's make a new category and everyone just throw on what you think. And do it. The openings and the closings are actually different. If you listen to the show, just jump onto some past shows, you'll hear the openings actually have a slightly different tone to them. And I kind of want to mix them up. They have to be funny. They can't be too long. They have to be about 5 to 10 seconds in length. They have to be easy to understand, and it can't be too esoteric. So those are kind of the rules. Whether or not there's prizes, right now there's no real prize. I might give out something. Who knows? Let's see what we get. Let's see how we go with it. But I'm going to at least get the winners and record them. I'll throw a few of my own in there, and then we'll put them on the future show. As for the future of Gaming Steve, I am going to do more shows. I don't know, again, maybe it's going to be every week, every other week. I'm still figuring out a schedule, but I have something planned because a lot of people said to me, hey, Steve, do you do Twitch? Are you going to be doing YouTube? Are you going to be doing video? Can you like show us while you record the show? Can we watch you or call in? I'm actually going to do something above all of that. I'm in the planning, in the works. It's going to be a little different. It's going to change the format of the show, but for the better. And I wonder if anyone can guess it, but it's going to be something that no one's really doing. I don't know a single gaming show that's going to do what I'm going to do. And it is above all of that. It is what I meant by above is that it sort of takes the best of all of those and even goes one step past. I'm in the works of doing it. If I do get this done, I will tell everyone ahead of time and then you can participate in the insanity. So with that being said, thank you very much for coming back and listening to me ramble on about myself and the E3 conference. If you have any questions, again, there's a million ways to get in touch with me. In the old days, there was one way. There was email. I almost always get back to you. Twitter, easiest way. Definitely Facebook me. Go to the forum. We have over 850,000 posts on the GamingSteve.com forum. Check it out, join, contribute. Let's get it up to a million. I want to say a million posts. Get a million posts. I will give out a prize to everyone in the community. Million. That's right. I want to see it. So that being said, everyone have a good gaming week, and I will talk to you later. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, remember to always finish him!